And I think I think we're about to zoom in. Richard, hello.
Hello, how are you?
All right, welcome. I'm going to leave you with the audience.
Okay, let me bring up my script. Anyway, I'm sending love.
Good to see you.
The philosopher Wittgenstein said it was not what the world is, but that it is, which is the mystical, the spiritual. It is the being of being, the matter of matter, the fact that there is something and not just nothing that should astonish us. And something else that is as mind-blowing as the existence of the universe is us, ourselves, Homo sapiens, the thinking animal. We are frail, finite creatures inhabiting a speck of dust, orbiting a star in an obscure arm of one of millions of identical galaxies, but it's in us that the universe has become aware of itself and has started thinking. There may be other self-conscious, reflective creatures inhabiting distant galaxies in the universe, but we are the only ones we know about, and it's worth relishing the fact. Though it took 14 billion years to produce us, it is in us that the universe has finally started thinking. That's what we're doing here today, wondering about ourselves and the universe in which we find ourselves. The sheep grazing on the high hills are not doing it. The fish swimming in the depth of the sea are not doing it. The stars glittering in the night sky are not doing it. Only the human animal, blessed and cursed with a compulsion to think about itself, does it. That's what Wittgenstein meant by the mystical, the sheer weirdness of the universe. So what's it all about? Well, sometimes a movie can help. In Ridley Scott's sci-fi movie Blade Runner, a retired police officer called Rick Deckard is hired to chase down and retire biologically engineered humanoids called replicants who serve as soldiers and slaves in off-world colonies. To prevent them developing emotions and the longing for independence that would result, the replicants have been engineered to have four-year lifespans, but it's feared that some of them have escaped to Earth looking for ways to prolong their existence. The replicants are built by the Tyrell Corporation, whose logo declares them to be more human than human. During his investigation, Deckard visits the Tyrell headquarters, where he meets Rachel, a replicant who thinks she's human because her consciousness has been enhanced with memories from the life of Tyrell's niece. Rachel is devastated when Deckard tells her she's not who she thinks she is. Her memories are not real, they're implants. She's not human, she is a replicant destined one day to be shut down forever. Something like that happened to human beings in the 19th century. Under the influence of thousands of years of religious dogma, we've been taught to think of ourselves as unique creations with immortal souls who were destined to live forever. Darwin's discovery of the evolution of species destroyed our uniqueness the way Rickard destroyed Rachel's. But in doing so, Darwin bequeathed to us a tragic new uniqueness, the knowledge of our finitude and the certainty of our dissolution at death. And we're told by science that trillions of years hence, the same fate lies in wait for the universe itself. Now, in one of the greatest books about all this, about death and dying ever written, The Tragic Sense of Life, by the Spanish philosopher Miguel de Unamuno, there's a quotation from the Italian philosopher Leopardi. "A time will come," he said, "when this universe and nature itself will be extinguished. And just as of the grandest kingdoms and empires of mankind and the marvelous things achieved therein, no vestige or memory remains today, so in like manner of the entire world and of the vicissitudes and calamities of all created things, there will remain not a single trace, but a naked silence and a most profound stillness will fill the immensity of space. And so before ever it has been uttered or understood, this admirable and fearful secret of universal existence will be obliterated and lost. But he then goes on to quote to the 18th century philosopher Etienne Pivert de Sérancourt, "We are perishing, that may be, but let us perish resisting, and if it is nothingness that awaits us, let us so act that it will be an unjust fate." In other words, live as if there were a transcendent purpose to life, so that even if the experiment of being was empty of meaning from the beginning, then we at least will have spoken words of purpose and love into the emptiness and will have chosen to perish resisting. But isn't it strange that a universe that came from nowhere for no reason gave birth to us, creatures with a passion for purpose and a hunger for meaning? We may only be animals who perish, not immortal souls, replicants, not angels, but think of what will be lost when the universe disappears and us with it. As well as the horrors we visited upon the earth, remember also the music we have composed, the cathedrals we have built, the art we've made, the poets who've broken our hearts by the beauty of their words, and the saints who have taught us to love our neighbors as ourselves. Doesn't that make us greater than a universe destined to be so obliterated and lost? If it is nothingness that awaits us, let us so act that it will be an unjust fate. Are good words to live by. Better, they're good words to die by. Come to think of it, they have already been written by that slovenly old poet with a face like a dried-up riverbed, W.H. Auden, when he declared, "Looking up at the stars, I know quite well that for all they care, I can go to hell. But on earth, indifference is the least we have to dread from man or beast. How should we like it were stars to burn with a passion for us we could not return? If equal affection cannot be, let the more loving one be me. Amen, I say to that. Amen."
Thank you, Richard, very much.